Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Ooh. Thank you. What a week it's been.
Did something happen this past week?
A couple things.
You guys both went. I was just here. It was lovely. Great weather. Really pleasant week. Had a good burrito on Wednesday. It was really a really good time.
We both went to hot places, although yours was not quite as hot as mine.
I think we probably were the furthest away from each other because you were opposite coast to coast. I was in southwest. You were almost northeast.
What was the temperature index in San Diego?
It was 72.
This is the
It
was great.
It was 106 in Washington, D.C.
And humid, I bet.
No, that's what it felt like to your body was 100 between 103 and 106.
That's not good.
My parents live outside D.C. down south a little bit, and Dad sent me a picture of, with the caption, "This is what I look like after being outside for 6 minutes."
Yeah,
and it was just like, just sweated. All it was gross.
It was all like that, except it was also an amazing week because we were in D.C. Celebrating Apollo's 50th anniversary.
How do you want to go through this? I want you to go first because I want to hear your stories first.
Okay, there's so many things we did.
Yeah.
First of all, I just want to say that a delightful love affair was started between Tested and the Smithsonian Institution.
There's nothing I've ever heard at this table that's made me happier than that.
I have to say, I have rarely encountered... It was just an amazing experience, right? Because this is like a 180-year-old institution, which means... you have the high potential for an entrenched bureaucracy in such an old institution. And that is not at all what we encountered. We encountered an organization that felt almost flat, where everyone we were dealing with had enthusiasm. They understood the mission. They were part of the whole process. They had authority. They had autonomy. They worked well together, different departments. I mean, it just was phenomenal.
I spent summers going to my grandparents in D.C., and my grandmother would take me every day. We'd hop on the metro, and we'd ride up to a different museum.
Yeah.
And went to all of the Smithsonian's over multiple times every summer for years and years and years. And there's such an incredible legacy of knowledge and just, like, embrace... The way they embrace new ways of sharing information across all of those museums is incredible. It's astounding.
It really is. And the way... and. Everyone understands the mission is to celebrate more and more human ingenuity so people can see clearly the nuts and bolts of how we did amazing things. It is a palace of stories. Mm-hmm. On the very first day, we got to go out to the conservation lab. I got to see a moon rover.
Is that Varhazy?
Yes. And I got to spend. I made a new friend in Lisa Young, the conservator who spent the last few years working on Neil Armstrong's suit. I got to meet Neil Armstrong's suit before the museum opened.
Is that at Hazy?
No, that's at
They have. One of the suits from, I think, Apollo 17 at Udvar-Hazy.
Discovery. For context, I've never been there, but you've always recommended going there. That is a massive facility.
So it's a tough... I have to imagine, like, I'm sure the conservators can talk about this at length, but, like, the challenge of what you put at the flagship on the mall, which is a relatively... It's a huge museum,
right?
But it's small for the stuff that they're showing. Like, they have the Spirit of St. Louis and the Bell X-1 and the Voyager.
And all three of those things are literally right in the front door.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, like, you can see them hanging. Shocking. You just walk in and it's right there.
In addition, there's an X-15. Mm. Yeah. And there's the propeller from the NASA wind tunnel from Ames.
There's the Wright Flyer.
The Wright Flyer has its own room, which is actually... The Wright Flyer moved me way more than I thought it would or could. At the end of one of the days, one of the employees said, "Come on upstairs. I got to show you this." They have the Wright brothers' original workbench.
What? Oh, I didn't know that.
They have one of three surviving bicycles by them. And I want to tell you, if you looked at this bicycle, you'd be like, "Oh, this is a nice, like, what, 40-50-year-old bicycle." Wow. No, 120 years old.
Well, it's like Douglas Adams' description of the people that were stuck in the cloud and figured out space flight, but they didn't really, like, all of that stuff seems like we clearly did it.
Right.
But it's incredible that they did it with wood struts and cloth.
Oh, so there's that famous shot of the Wright Flyer just having taken off.
Mm-hmm.
I got a tour of that photo by one of the employees, which was amazing. So if you look at that photo, what you can see just behind the Wright Flyer on the ground you can see where it was because there are footprints all the way around the silhouette of the wings and the body of the plane. So what you can see is that from where it was standing to where in the photo it's off the ground, it's like maybe 10 feet. That's how fast that thing just lifted into the air. Wow. And it's all in that famous photo. Wow. That's the... Again, this is like I just spent the whole week getting this kind of deep download into all this beautiful stuff. I got to go downstairs underneath one of the old LOX rockets and look up at this big like 25-inch wide shower head for LOX to make the it was thrilling. It's,
and all of those museums, like the Air and Space Museum is incredible.
Yes.
But the American History Museum, the Natural History Museum, the art museums, they're all
We got a little bit of a night tour of the Museum of Natural History.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Which is okay, so you know, the Steinhardt Aquarium has an incredible collection of specimens, over, I think, 1.5 million specimens going back to 1850.
That's at the California Academy of Sciences in San Francisco.
Yep. Yeah. And that makes it, I think, the third largest collection of fish specimens in the world after the Museum of Natural History's in New York and London for fish alone. Mm-hmm. The Museum of Natural History at the Smithsonian, somewhere around 140 million objects.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They can't even precisely count them because there's just too damn
many. And they've been getting them for 150 years at this point. And like, it's just, I got to go on the Backscenes tour once when I was a kid, and they just have rooms and rooms and rooms of these. They're not quite card catalog drawers, but they're like wide drawers that are flat. And when you open, they'll open one, they'll be like, I have no idea what's going to be in here. And then it's just a million different butterflies from like Polynesia or something.
Or arrowheads or nails from a ship that got dug up. Yeah. I will say in getting to meet the Neil Armstrong suit before the museum opened. So the Neil Armstrong suit was revealed on Thursday, I believe, last week. And the public's appetite for seeing it was incredible. There was a line out the door every single day, usually like an hour to 2 hour wait to get in to see it. I got to see it before the museum opened, so I decided to put on Ryan Nagata's spacesuit to see it. And the best part was is that Ryan is good friends with Lisa Young, and she's every bit as enthusiastic and dedicated as you would hope her to be. And when she saw me wearing Ryan's suit, she was like, oh, come over here. I want to see it. I haven't seen Ryan's work up close. It was like that kind of wonderful collaborative relationship. I wore Anthony Kovacs's checklist pocket on my leg and Tom Sachs's Mars Yard moon boots.
You could tell the sneakerheads in the Twitter replies on that thread, because they're like, oh, those are Mars Yard moon boots. It was very good.
I wore Tom's regular Mars Yard shoes the whole week, and the two times people noticed it was like young men on the street, like, "Hey man, nice sneaks."
One of the things from the build was I heard somebody on like in the crowd on mic going, "Hey, those are Tom Sachs's Mars Yard shoes." It seemed like an incredible, like how do you celebrate one of humanity's greatest achievements?
Well,
right? And if not humanity's greatest achievement.
And the Smithsonian was the one doing it, right? This in conjunction with NASA, but it was the Smithsonian's party. They took over the whole mall. They had space themes exhibits across the mall all week. On Friday, I helped host a NASA TV 1 hour program, which aired on the Science Channel as well, about all aspects of the 50th anniversary.
In which you wore a tux and the A7L? Is that right?
No, not quite. At the end of that day, I went to a gala celebration at the Smithsonian, where we sat we had dinner in that front hall.
Wow.
Right? With the Bell X1 above our table.
Wow.
Right? So that's in and of itself really cool. I met some people I didn't realize I would meet who I have mutual friends with, so that was also awesome. But then that's me wearing a full tux at the gala. But immediately following the gala, I went out onto the mall because every night this last week, they've had this incredible projection show. 59 Productions, these guys that do projection mapping on large landmarks, really the best in the world at it, out of England. They built this unbelievable performance of projecting the Saturn V rocket and the moon launch onto the Washington Monument and using this giant spire as a canvas in the sky. And there were moments in the projection performance. So the first thing you see is the Saturn V rocket projected actual perfectly full scale.
Moving. You see the evaporation coming off of the tank. Yeah,
you see the liquid oxygen smoke coming off. Animated.
That's what I was looking for.
And there's no uncanny valley with it. Whatever the opposite of the uncanny valley, the closer you get, the higher, sharper it get. But that was just the static. That was the static projection, this beautiful moving projection, and also weirdly felt sometimes like the smoke was responding to the wind around you.
Oh, wow.
Right. Because your brain would kind of make that connection. Yeah. But then they started showing this performance that they'd written of the rocket taking off, of the full moon landing, using the spire as a singular linear canvas. And there were times when you forgot you were staring at a monument with projections and you were just watching the command capsule coming through the atmosphere slowly.
So that was the thing that I didn't realize, because I thought that I knew it would take off. And like the Saturn V is about 600 feet.
363, I think.
Yeah.
It's two-thirds the size of the...
It's two-thirds the size, but then you add 43 feet for the traveler.
Right, and so I didn't know if it was going to go take off and then you just not see it, but it's like as if a camera was on it and tracking it, and you would see it slowly go up.
You saw it tilt over, you saw the cone of flame. It seemed amazing. I'm sad I didn't get to see it.
You realize watching it that they had... there are a lot of limitations to projecting on a single strip, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big building.
What's that?
It's wide. It's wide, but it's also way taller than it is wide.
Yeah, exactly. Vertical video, folks.
Yeah. So they did a tremendous job at building a really exciting narrative about the whole history of the Apollo space program, using countdown clocks and archival footage and all the supporting material on side projections that were on, plus an incredible sound system. So at the end of the gala on Friday night, there were performances at 9:30, 10:30, 11:30, and I think 12:30, as well. So we saw the 10:30, 11:30, 12:30. So I had to leave the gala in my full tux, meet up with the tested crew who had my spacesuit, and I didn't have anything interim. All I had was a tux or the A7L. And I'm all, you know, so I'm sitting in the bleachers watching the performance in my tux, and everyone's like, sometimes if you don't move too, if you don't start sweating, you can kind of maintain.
Yeah.
So I'm in the tux. I'm moving sort of slowly. And after about half an hour, I saw Michael Giacchino, and he was like, "Aren't you sweating balls in that thing?" And I'm like, "Actually, no." And I'm kind of like getting off on looking this good in this heat. Just wearing the full tux. One of the organizers of this entire event went and found me a Apollo 50th t-shirt. So I was able to wear that under the spacesuit, and we got some pictures of me right up next to the rocket down there on the mall.
We
were up until like 1:30 in the morning, 2 in the morning.
How long did the show ran for a couple hours, right?
The actual projection show was like, I want to say like 10 minutes.
Oh, really?
It was relatively short.
And then repeat it.
Yeah. Okay. Not a dry eye in the house every single time.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
So like I'm watching it and I look over just as it finishes and it's Bobek. And I'm like, oh, hey, man, how's it going? And we had been corresponding about whether or not we were going to connect while we were in D.C. And there he is like sitting right next to me, and I'm trying to talk to him. And I realize, oh, he's been crying because it's so moving.
Yeah.
Every single one of the performances kind of hit you in the gut that.
When last night, I've been following this Apollo 50th account, which on Twitter, which has been brilliant,
hasn't it?
So basically, what they've been doing is posting mostly just transcripts of the communication back and forth between Capcom and the command module and the LEM, and over the entire run of in the weeks leading up, it was about training. Once the launch happened, it started being transcripts. And last night they got to the point where they shot the LEM back into the moon,
right?
And Neil Armstrong said, that was a good one, huh? And I was just like, oh shit, I'm gonna cry.
Oh yeah,
for a tweet.
Well, at the gala that I went to on Friday night, there was a wonderful onstage interview with Mike Collins and Buzz Aldrin, and my takeaway from this week is that Mike Collins is a comedy genius. He is one of the driest, funniest mofos I have ever seen. He was hilarious. And of course, he got the question, well, at that point, you were the loneliest man in human history. And he's like, everyone keeps talking about loneliest man on the loneliest journey on the dark side of the moon. He's like, I was in constant communication with NASA and the CM the entire time, except for those brief periods of time I was on the backside of the moon, which was delightful.
Well, I mean, so that's the thing. It's like, he was talking all the time. Mm-hmm. They were like, when those guys were on the lab, I didn't realize this, but they didn't know where they landed. Like NASA had to figure out where exactly they had landed.
Yeah.
And that involved them telling him, hey, look in this sector. And then he would look out the window and see if he could see them when he was on a pass. Well, be like, nope, not that time. I can only look at one of these at a time, guys. You got to give me more specific instructions.
Well, and then so Buzz was giving this wonderful description of exactly why they landed the way that they did. He goes, look, we could see that the landing site we'd specced was at the bottom of a crater. And mm-hmm. that's not good. He said, so you have three options. You can pull up short. The problem with that is it involves coming to a pitch to use your rockets to slow yourself down. And at that point, you can't see the moon because because
the windows face up.
The attitude is,
So that one's not great, especially when you don't have a lot of fuel. The other one is you could go to the side and land to the side of the crater, but that has the same exact problem of you lose your bearings.
Yeah.
So the third one, which uses the most fuel, but is the one that has the most positive feedback, is just go all the way across. And, you know, it's just you realize what engine. I don't know. I mean, I know that Buzz and Mike have answered these questions every day for 50 years, and yet their ability to continue to make the story thrilling is remarkable. It's a real gift to be able to do that and keep it fresh and really like believe in that mission of transmitting what a remarkable thing that it was.
But at the same time, super mundane, right? Like they land, they get up, they're walking on the world, a new world for the first time. And Neil and Buzz have a conversation about like how much the lander sunk into the dust because they didn't understand. Like we didn't know about the geology of the place.
Right. They were
like,
told it was going to sink 4 feet in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Somebody warned them.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You were busy on Friday. I got to watch a little bit of the live stream. Was it Friday?
Egress. It was Thursday.
Was it Friday or Thursday? That was Thursday. Okay. We did Project Egress. We assembled with a good team of some tested favorites. Kate Sabaker, Sophie Wong, Mel Ho, Jen Schachter, and Andrew Barth, all of us on stage assembling the 45 pieces of the command module hatch. And it was exactly the Calico exquisite corpse construction that we were hoping it would be.
It was fascinating. Like I was sitting and watching first like couple hours in a Discord with some other people who were tested fans. And we were just talking about it. And it was so fun to watch the live problem solving. It's a thing I've seen a million times doing one day builds here in the shop, but they often don't come through in the video.
Well, hats off to the Smithsonian's team, because the place they put you in was a stage where people could basically stand all around you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they were filming it because they were broadcasting locally.
So it's the Beyond Earth Gallery, and they have like they have half a dozen remote cameras in there that they can change the angles and move them around. Yeah. So actually at the end, here's what it was like working with the Smithsonian. At the end of it, we go to them and we're like, so you guys got recorded a bunch of footage up there. And they said, yeah. And they said, could we use that? And he's like, have you got a hard drive? And we hand him a hard drive. And 10 minutes later, he hands us all the cameras coverage of the footage.
I mean, whoever was doing the production on that did a really good job of keeping... Like it's hard to keep the thing that's interesting happening at any given moment in there, and they did a lovely job with it.
Here's the other thing about that construction, and I had some experience doing that with Jen for Rosie the Riveter, and also a couple of years ago at the Exploratorium, the 3 days I spent building the Strawn-based. There is an aspect to building live in front of people that is a completely different sort of performance theater than any other media I can imagine, because I'm able to sort of shut out that the crowd is there and just concentrate on the thing that's in front of me. And they're able to actually watch my process and our process happen for real. And the stakes are real. I was the only one who was confident that we were going to get done by the end of the day. Everyone else was kind of pooping bricks about it.
Open these boxes faster.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, there was a moment at which I turned to Jen quietly and I was like, we're in the home stretch. And she's like, really? And I was like, yeah, yeah. Once that thing went, everything else is going to be easy. Just to kind of like give her a little bit of succor from all the stress. Because Jen Schachter has really been holding all of this project in her head up until now.
You had 6 hours to do it? 7 hours?
7 hours. Seven and a half, ultimately, by the end of the day.
It was intense. Like there was a lot of tension there. It was fun. It was fun watching people watch Joey do his thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Because like, well, and you and Joey working together too at this point is really fascinating. Because like, you know, when you should do an aside to the camera and show something, so Joey's gonna have the bit to connect the thing, and Joey knows he needs the bit and what pieces to get to make that work.
Yeah.
And it was really fun watching it.
It's a delightful. You know, so it's funny that now you say that, it strikes me that maybe we could do a one day build of actually making a video and talking about how we, I mean, you know, one of the things that I think is really unique about our tested build videos is the amount of silence in them. And that's something that Joey and I figured out together in collaboration of like, let's do this. And once it happened, it started opening up this whole other kind of way of cutting. And it'd be really delightful to show that process because I have the same sort of I have the same simpatico relationship with Scott Sorensen, who's my Mythbusters main cameraman. And that when that relationship is good, you know, people ask me about advice for being on television, like, you know, I've acted as consigliere to a lot of new television talent. And one of the key things I say is like, it's really important to have a cameraman you like, even maybe more important than having a director you like, although both are real, really important.
And if it's the same person, then great.
Yeah. I mean, I've had bad cameramen who didn't care about, and by bad, I only mean they didn't care about what I was doing.
Yeah.
And that's not, they don't have to. That's not the job requirement, but man, it makes the product so much better when it's there.
Well, I mean, and having somebody who shoots and edits makes a big difference. Or even, even if they're not going to be the editor, but having them think about how the edit's going to go together as they're shooting is all that. Anyway, we're talking about video into space.
That build on the floor couldn't have gone better. Microsoft's prototype design group provided the base, which was just so beautifully built and so simple, and the main core of the door, which was gorgeous, although I split it on a couple of seams, hammering the outside of the window into it.
Audible gasps in the crowd on that one, by the way. That was when I tuned in just in time for that. I was like, oh, wow. So that's how this is going to go.
This was the only time I was looking at the tools and I was a little bit performative about it. Because every time I stopped doing what I was doing and I went and looked at the tools, I could tell there was like a pause in the room and people were like, what's he going to grab next? And so I'm holding this window up and I've been grinding it and it's not quite working. It's not quite working, but I got it sort of in. So it's wedged in, but it's not good. And I'm looking down, and I pick up the mallet and I hear like the whole crowd going, here we go.
So did you crack I couldn't tell if you cracked the window or cracked the door.
I cracked the door.
Okay.
Which is
you needed that space.
I should have shaved another 50 thou off the outside of the CNC MDF window frame, but that is what it is.
Well, the end result was absolutely lovely.
It's out on the floor of the Smithsonian now. It's out there in the main gallery.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And Jen designed these beautiful placards on the side that tell the whole story, give credit to all the collaborators. And it starts from the front one and then it moves clockwise around. So it's phenomenal.
It's like the plaque left on the moon.
Yeah.
Jimmy DeResta's hinges
weren't they magnificent?
Mwah.
I know.
Just lovely.
But Evan and Caitlin turned out these like mood strut covered in mood paint, so when you held on to it the heat changed the color.
Did Kate do the galaxy paint on her piece?
Kate did the galaxy paint on her piece. Sophie Wong did hers like a piece of fine jewelry with wire wraps. Mel painted theirs in dazzle paint.
Yeah, Sean was more blueprint.
Sean was blueprint, which is beautiful exposed edges. Yeah. A couple of the parts, the vent and the gearbox were built. Matter Hackers, one of the builders, and it built as if they could go right into the real door out of hand-machined aluminum, sandblasted or tumbled.
Who did the crank?
Gorgeous parts. That is not on the top of my head.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm terribly sorry. I can't remember all the makers off the top of my head. We'll put it in the link below.
45 people out of my head. I'm so disappointed in you.
And now you want to build another one.
I want to build some more. First of all, I definitely...
You need a hatch.
This whole project exists because I wanted my own hatch.
As many of these projects...
Right. Yeah. It's all based on desire.
So, the tested stage show this fall, in October. You can do it on the Castro Theater.
Exactly.
Yeah, tickets available now. They're not really available. Sorry.
What else happened? So then on Saturday night, I hosted the actual 50th anniversary celebration coinciding with Neil Armstrong stepping onto the moon 50 years to the minute.
Wow.
And to be clear, we were 90 seconds behind. In our timing,
At
the moment Michael Giacchino played the second of the two fanfares he'd written for NASA, the new one is called Advent, and it's so beautiful that at the moment in the video that supports it, Neil steps on the moon is 50 years to the minute from the moment he stepped on the moon. So and it cool. was, it was such a thrilling performance to be a part of. Herbie Hancock, Pharrell, Natasha Bettenridge, Meredith Vieira,
LeVar Burton.
LeVar Burton. I mean, LeVar is such a being of pure light. That guy, he and I, it's like, it's hard for us to get stuff done when we're together because we're just like,
oh, that's so good.
I love that guy.
That sounds like a Star Trek spoiler.
The performance itself was amazing. Michael Giacchino, obviously, in addition to being an amazing composer, is like the stupidly nicest guy in the world. He was there with his whole family, extended family, and, you know, I know them all really well. So that was also delightful.
That's
it was like
awesome.
Being wrapped in a big cocoon of family. And then the crowd was phenomenal. I don't mind saying that I killed as the host. It went great. It was funny. It was moving. It was poignant. Neil Armstrong's son and granddaughter sang this magnificent song called Flight of Fancy that... Mm. It's genuinely beautiful, and they sang it with an orchestra backing them. Pharrell sang Freedom with a full orchestra.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a stunning and stupendous night. We ended it on the roof of the Watergate Hotel. I stayed at the Watergate. And by the way, the pens at the Watergate have inscribed on them, "I stole this from the Watergate Hotel."
Nice.
That's a good sense of humor.
I drove by there years and years without having any idea but it's a lovely hotel.
It was a lovely hotel, except for one small thing that happened.
What happened, Adam?
Well,
what really grinds your gears?
Well, at the end of a full day of filming on Friday, out on the mall, outdoors, so I was hot and in need of some succor because I was going to have to put a tux on 2 hours later.
Yeah.
I went back to my hotel and their air conditioning had gone out.
So
my room was 80 degrees.
Probably felt nice after being outside all day.
here's my tip. If you really want to get cool, don't be angry. That turned out to be the linchpin, right? I'm sitting there like, it's colder. And then I thought, I should really meditate a little bit and get rid of some of this anger. And then cooled right down, took a nap. When I woke up, it had already lowered by 3 degrees. Obviously, they were scrambling to fix it.
Yeah.
And that was my only issue. I didn't tweet their name when I was complaining about the heat in the room because I don't want to trash the business itself.
Yeah, no.
Everyone I dealt with there was phenomenally awesome. It was a great hotel.
Well, it's one of those situations where you yelling at people isn't going to make anything any better.
No,
it's just going to make everything worse.
The problem is the whole thing goes out.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, there was I ran into a neighbor of mine in the hotel at 1:30 in the morning. Yeah, my neighbor Anthony, who lives like a block from here, was
funny.
In a dance show right next door to our theater on the night that we were doing it. So I'm back at my room. It's 1:30 in the morning on Friday night, and I've pushed the number on. I'm sitting there holding everything, my spacesuit, everything. I'm really tired, and I hear somebody go, "Hold on, I gotta go talk to this guy." And I think, okay, here comes a fan interaction. I'm really, really tired. And I turn and it's my neighbor, Anthony. He's just messing with me.
Oh, that's really funny. I mean, anything else? I feel like there's an infinite number of things.
These are all the big highlights of the week. Tested's going to have a bunch of content on a bunch of different levels of conservation, some new stuff we saw.
You talked to the people who did the projections.
We talked with the people who did the projections, and that's going to, I'd love to do a deeper dive with them in a future project at some point because what they do is incredible. The problems they solve, basically they never do the same thing twice.
Of course.
Like
of course.
Even remotely.
Yeah.
So how to build a team that does that is something I'm really fascinated by.
Joey's probably working on a one-day build at some point for Project Egress.
Yep. Yes.
Okay.
It just felt like I spent an entire week inside the enthusiasm of human ingenuity.
So good.
With a whole bunch of people also dedicated to that. And it was what a sheer delight.
Once in a lifetime.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah.
Norm. How was Comic-Con?
Yeah, time for this? Hey, oh my gosh. I'll give you the cliff notes. We were there for 2 days repping for Test Aid.
That's your shortest Comic-Con ever, isn't it?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, in 15 years. Said it was you know, saying hi to friends.
Right. Yeah, you got to see the folks from Weta.
Got to see Richard and Greg Broadmoor. Nice. Had great conversations with them. They brought their team. It's wonderful because they bring different folks out every year.
Right.
From different departments. And So Luke, who was the builder and the actor inside I Am Mother, yep. He was there. Got to catch up with him. Some of our friends from the model shop, Leonard, was also his first time in the States.
Great.
So it's always great to see like their first time. And of course, they get to be surrounded by people who love their work.
Yeah, that's cool.
They had some stuff from, you know, Anniversary of Planet of the Apes. It was the 50th anniversary of Comic-Con. Did you realize that?
No.
It was the Comic-Con, 50th Comic-Con, 50th anniversary of Apollo 11
landing. What was the first? The first Comic-Con was probably like 20 guys in the basement of the Sheraton
It was a much smaller scale. Yes, yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. But hung out with Kishore there, who was
there
on a couple
of panels. By the second year, they were like, it was so much better last year.
Yeah. I mean, every year.
Crowds are terrible this year.
Oh, Kishore did like 3 cosplays, did he not?
Well, fewer than expected. He had the suitcase full of them, but then we were busy working, and I think he did for the last day when he did the panels with Kyle Hill from Nerdist.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Kyle.
Yeah. Awesome. And then, you know, hang out with Tom Spina and those folks a bit. Magic Wheelchair was there. Got to say hi to them.
Cool. Fabulous.
The prop store folks, obviously, every year, really great stuff for their fall auction. And then, again, it was just saying hi to a lot of people we only get to see maybe once a year because that's when they head over to San Diego.
Fabulous.
Yeah. A lot of videos out this week.
I have a YouTube channel I just wanted to call out because I was talking about it beforehand. Lockpicking Lawyer.
Okay.
There's a YouTube channel called Lockpicking Lawyer. You never see his face. He has the same cadence in every video, of which there's like hundreds and hundreds.
Wow.
And each video is him looking at a lock and ascertaining how easy or hard it is to break into. And the spoiler, they're almost all super easy. Mm-hmm. There are weaknesses to everything, but he is very robust about talking about why certain weaknesses are not as important as other weaknesses, etc. And it's a delightful, like, there's hundreds of videos. They're all very self-similar, and they're very comforting to me. I watch them a lot. And we've been going back and forth on Twitter, DMing on Twitter. He's coming to town soon. I'm hoping to have him over here on Tested, maybe to teach me a thing or two to fill out my lockpicking skills,
cool.
which
Absolutely.
Are limited.
Yeah.
Lockpicking Lawyer. Yes. A fun
good,
YouTube
it's
channel.
A good skill to have.
Yeah. No, not bad. It's not a bad skill to have in a pinch. I have rescued several situations by being able to pick locks.
It turns out, if you have that credit card lockpick set in your wallet, you can save somebody $300, no problem.
Yeah, if you ever run into Kevin Mitnick, ask him for one of his business cards.
Oh, do his cards have picks?
As far as I know, he was the first one to have the etched stainless steel business card that was a set of lockpicks.
I had to pay for mine from the tool guys years ago at Maker Faire.
Oh, yes, and I have that set too.
Yeah. Extra O's.
Yeah.
Well, now that you're back for a couple weeks without a ton of travel, I highly recommend go watching some movies. So we can talk about some of these movies.
Yes.
They're out. I saw yesterday. I will give my thumbs up recommendation.
Really?
Excellent.
So
excellent.
Please, both you go watch yesterday. And there's a movie that it's, I think, a limited release, but it's getting rave reviews. It's Awkwafina's new movie, The Farewell. I think it's played with Kabuki.
Oh.
It's based on the New Yorker story about this family and how they don't tell the grandmother, the matriarch of the family, that she's gonna die.
I heard about this.
Yes.
I heard about this.
100%
Rotten
Tomatoes.
Have a family. They have a fake wedding to bring everyone close.
They bring everyone together as a way to say farewell without letting her in on it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Wow. I can't wait to see that.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
I watched Endgame again in my hotel television and wept like a baby at the end.
I've only seen it the one time. I think I should probably go back again while it's still in theaters.
This was my third time.
Yeah.
That was delightful.
I finally saw Spider-Man last week.
I have not yet
that
seen
movie's,
it.
That movie's, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Awesome. I cannot wait. Four of my spacesuits for the San Francisco listeners, four of my spacesuits are on display at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art as part of Joseph Becker's, the curator there, a wonderful art installation called Far Out, about space habitats and the future thinking, the ways in which we posited how to live in space. It's a beautiful exhibit. And they custom dressed my brand new EVA, which we haven't even done a tested video on, my 2001, my Mercury, and What's the fourth
Aces.
One? Aces. Aces, right. The orange Aces suit. Thank you.
Yes. Tom Sex has spacesuits there as well in a wonderful display.
Oh, his display is beautiful because it's four-sided. So he's got the suit, but all the interior parts are displayed with
it. On the other sides?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very
And one of my favorite parts, I mean, the suits are great. There's also, I think we mentioned last time, Steve Neal, the model maker, he made a 2001... The space station.
He did a 36.
Really?
He did a 36-inch model of the space station in, I think, 6 weeks.
Yeah,
and it's mind blowing. And I'll tell you a little bit of behind the scenes action is that, of course, because a lot of the hard parts, the actual shells, are self similar. He made a section and cast it, only to have his resin fail. So he then scratch built all that he needed out of styrene. So he built the entire thing effectively twice in 6 weeks. Wow. I don't know many other people that could have done it. It did tax him, as is, you know, we were corresponding during the whole thing. But the model itself is gorgeous. It's lit. You can actually see the Pan Am jet coming into the lit. You know, the poster, you get to see it there.
I mean, one of my favorite things, we got a little preview of it. The things that really, from my childhood, from the NASA Ames collection, were these commissions of what it would be like for humans to live on, like ring worlds space stations.
Yeah,
and
the paintings.
Those paintings with the cross sections of what would farms like be if they were on these rings around planets.
Yeah.
These are massive. The originals are there, and getting up close to see that painted detail is just...
At MoMA?
At the moment.
Wow, I gotta go.
And they have an original Gemini suit from NASA Ames. And I'm going to go back and take some more pictures because I may end up remachining some of the stuff on my Gemini suit.
So this is a non sequitur. Did you see the Close Encounters model at Uvrahazy? It's in it used to be in the Discovery
thing. Mothership.
Yeah, the mothership.
I've actually pointed out many, many details to the locals about them, about that ship that they might not have noticed.
It's if you go, it's off on the side.
It's at least as it was beautiful when I was there. A model as has ever been built for a science fiction film. Yeah. It's totally incredible.
I think
that's a good place. Yeah.
That's
there's
a reasonable
so
place to stay. I know.
We could go on for
this
hours
was a crazy
hours.
Week. It was really amazing.
Consider this podcast a tease for all the content. Everything we talk about, there will be some video about it. A lot of Comic-Con stuff is going to go out this week, 16 videos, and then the DC trip stuff will go out in the weeks following.
Oh, I did learn one amazing thing.
Oh.
So I'm backstage when Neil Armstrong's son comes back to look at my spacesuit, and we're standing there talking about it. And
do you have it on?
No, I had it hanging in the dressing room. And he said something about, I said, do you know what's in this chest, in this pocket, which is on the left thigh, right? I have the checklist pocket that Anthony Kovacs built because I own a Apollo-era real one and had it replicated. But I've never been able to discern what was in this left thigh pocket.
Left front thigh.
It is the extra lunar sample return bag.
Wow.
So depending on how things went, he told me directly. He was like, Neil's job was to get out there and immediately put a sample in the bag and put it in that pocket. So in case they had to scrub and get
something.
The hell out, he had something. So his very first task was get something in there, get it in the pocket. So I've got a beautiful lunar sample return bag that Anthony made for me. That's going in my space.
That's
pocket.
So cool.
Yes. And it came from the about as close from the horse's mouth as it can come. Yeah. Again, like I said, the whole week was just bathed in warm enthusiasm for the brilliance of human collaboration and ingenuity. What could be better?
Did you watch any Apollo movies as you were traveling?
I watched Apollo 11 again in my hotel room and again wept like a baby. And the filmmaker was in the bar at the end of Saturday night.
First Man or Apollo 11?
No, Apollo 11.
Apollo 11. Oh, yeah. We met with him. Yeah,
Dr. Spent awesome. We spent about half an hour talking to each other. And I met the guy at the archives who found all that original
footage. The 65mm.
Wow.
And we could do a whole podcast just about how weirdly amazing that film is, because I haven't been party to any of these conversations.
Yeah,
that
he was
you've
sitting in
on.
Your seat.
Oh, my God.
We had that podcast
all
about
those
it.
Weird compositions. And I described it to someone else. I watched it a second time. I was like, you know what this feels like? This feels like, what if you gave Werner Herzog the job to make this documentary, because of all these unbroken, beautiful cuts, right? Just the long, those long cuts are something that more documentaries should have, because your consciousness ends up changing while you're watching this stuff for so long.
I mean, you think about what our field of vision is as humans, and those long cuts are the long sweeping shots are how you get as close to that as you can on film. Even with like even IMAX doesn't come close to standing, you know, in Yosemite Valley and looking at El Cap or whatever.
And when you see that at the end of the film, when he does that 360 pano of the moon's surface, it just feels so immediate and so... Every choice made about that documentary was amazing to me. Not using any narration, the long cuts, the incredible weirdness and wonderfulness of the footage, the ways in which they built narrative elements, like the Neil song. Thinking about his kids.
And the song at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really, really moving. So, yeah, I watched that just before going out to do a bunch of coverage about it.
Perfect way to do it.
Of course, exactly.
Okay. Well, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for watching, everybody.
Woo! That was a...
Back to Earth,
felt like it was about 5 minutes. All right.
Back to Earth.
Back to Earth. Thanks, guys.
Bye.